Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Shartok. Back with us this week is Albany County District Attorney David Soares, my friend. Welcome, DA Soares. Glad to have you here.
Alan, how are you?
Well, you know. Okay, so Albany's police chief says calls by a common counselor for him to resign in the wake of a fatal shooting Friday are unhelpful. Chief Eric Hawkins responded to comments by Ward 10 Counselor Owusu Anani. Following Anani's demand, Mayor Kathy Sheehan expressed complete confidence in the police department and Chief Hawkins. What do you think, David Soares?
Well, these are two men that obviously really care about their community and two men that are really frustrated as to what we're seeing on our streets every day. But I don't agree with the call for the chief's resignation. This police department here in Albany, they've been doing the best that they could possibly do under the circumstances. They are apprehending individuals who are out there committing crimes. The problem isn't with the apprehension. The problem is with our ability to retain these individuals once they are apprehended. Failed policies like raise the age, bail reform continues to allow for these individuals, once they're caught, to be back out on the street perpetrating more crimes. And I think everyone's frustrated. And the Owusu is correct to be frustrated. The chief of police is correct to be frustrated. But now is not the time to be divided. Now is the time to come together and to put together strategies that we believe are going to be effective. And when I say that, I don't mean just arrest and prosecution. If you want to know what your city is going to look like in 5 years, ask yourself, what are you doing now for the 10-year-olds that are in the most vulnerable communities? If you're investing in them now, if you're pouring into them now, we have a wonderful future ahead. If we're ignoring them, then what is coming down the pike is worse than what we have now.
And so specifically, right now, if you had your way, what would the changes be?
Well, one of the vulnerabilities that I'm hoping that our legislature and our governor will come back and repair is the Raise the Age statute, which right now, when you apprehend a 16 or a 17-year-old with a loaded firearm in our community, unless that youth actually displays that firearm and we can prove that they display that firearm, that individual is going to be he's going to be going to family court instead of being held accountable here in the adolescent part of our courts. And so that's a significant problem. We have individuals that we've apprehended half a dozen times, three, four times, with loaded firearms under different circumstances that we're unable to hold accountable because of these laws. And so the legislature has to come back and repair that glaring hole. And once again, they have to give judges the discretion to consider community and consider safety of the community when making decisions about bail.
So how come they're not doing it? There will be those cynics who say, you know, you put the Democrats in power, you got a Democratic governor, you got two Democratic houses, everybody's nicey-nicey all the time, but now's the time to get tougher.
Well, you know, the thing that I want to make sure that we stay focused on are the people who live in the communities that are just living under the worst conditions because of the violence. And just to give you, you know, an example,
sure.
You know, we've had, you know, last month, year to date, the end of September, we've had 167 confirmed shots fired. 167. We've had 77 shooting victims. You know, and we've recovered, you know, 118 illegal guns alone. This year. This is a problem because when I mention those numbers, I'm not talking about those numbers being spread out throughout the county. I'm talking about those incidents happening in a very specific community. And quite frankly, this is the community right now that has all of the burden in upholding, you know, these experimental policies. This is not being spread, you know, to Glenmont. It's not being spread to Gilderland and other communities. It's concentrated in the most vulnerable neighborhoods, and we just cannot allow for this to stand.
You know, I'm fascinated by your word vulnerable because, you know, when you have the kinds of shootings and, you know, hurtful actions that get taken by people, some people think that you are not doing your job because it's happening. How do you deal with that kind of criticism?
I absolutely understand the criticism. But what the public needs to understand is that unlike prior to 2020, when an individual was apprehended with a firearm in the city of Albany, that individual was going to be remanded to the Albany County Correctional Facility, thus removing that individual as a threat from the community, but also removing that individual as a target from people who would be shooting at that individual. But that's gone now. So now when there's a shooting incident that's being perpetrated by Defendant A, and he's apprehended, because, you know, judges must consider the least restrictive. I want to continue to harp on that word because that's the standard now. And that individual finds themselves back out on the street. Now, the person who that individual was shooting at is certainly going to be coming out, coming around and taking a shot at him or her. And that's the biggest problem we have right now is the cycle of recycled violence.
Let's talk a little bit about some specifics, including bail reform. Now, Governor Kathy Hochul says an ongoing spike in gun violence around the state is due to the continuing fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic. Speaking on Long Island Monday, she said many factors are involved in gun violence, and it is not a mental health or police enforcement issue alone. Meanwhile, on the heels of two fatal shootings in Albany last week, you, District Attorney David Soares, say you are baffled by the current level of violence, echoing similar calls by Republicans. You're a Democrat, and you pointed to the state's bail reforms as a reason for the uptick. Can you explain?
So, Alan, look, the reality is, in 2004, I decided to run for this position because I had experienced the failed public safety policy that was rooted in such rugged ideological terms. That was the Rockefeller reform. Now, one of the first things that they did when they passed the Rockefeller reform was they took away judicial discretion by creating mandatory minimums. Well, if you look at that failed policy that was brought about by one ideological base and you compare it to these policies that have been brought about by another ideological base, they have so many things in common. That is, eliminate judicial discretion. And so I'm as critical of public safety policies that fail the most vulnerable in our community today as I was back in 2004. And that's the point that I don't want people to miss here. This has nothing to do with politics. What this has to do is with children having to watch television on the floor of their dining rooms, because to be on a sofa in a living room where there is a window makes them vulnerable to being shot in their own home, which we have examples of here in Albany as well. And we just cannot allow for people to live under those circumstances and under those conditions. The violence isn't just affecting the people who are perpetrating them on one another. It's affecting everyone. And I've said this over and over again. You know, when you talk about neighborhoods and communities that experience violence, it's not everyone in those communities that are engaged in this behavior. It's the vast majority of folks are there because that's the housing that they can afford. But do they have to also live under these circumstances where we have 167 incidents of guns being fired in their neighborhoods? This is outrageous, and we can't normalize this. We cannot normalize this, and we can't look away. We have to address this, and we have to address it now.
Well, Mr. District Attorney, let me ask you this. What is the role of the judge in all of this? I mean, are some of these judges just too soft?
Well, so since the beginning of time, you have had jurists who prosecutors will not agree with. I've had my incidents. I've had my issues with certain judges and how they judge. But you know what? That's what they're elected to do. And the idea now that judges all across New York State have somehow forgotten their oath of office and forgotten how to read the law is just absurd. And I will say this. Look, our governor, she did make efforts to address many of these issues in this last budget, and she was turned away from it. My hope is that we're back in session and that we're reengaging in this issue, and we're not allowing for people to color what is really happening in our streets. And because it's not just here in Albany, it's everywhere. Judges must apply the least restrictive non-monetary condition when considering bail. Judges cannot consider whether this person continues to be a threat to public safety. And that is absurd, because we're the only state that's engaged in some kind of bail reform that will not allow judges to do what we've elected them to do.
So is there an alternative to, you say, allowing judges to do what we elected them to do? Is there an alternative to motivating judges to have courage in order to keep the streets safe?
Well, it's not about judges having courage. I think there's plenty of judges that have courage. It's the law that they are bound by. They can't deviate from the law. And until we have the help of our legislators, and until we have, action being taken there, this is going to be the status quo.
So are they? I'm sorry for interrupting, but are the legislators chicken? I mean, what's going on?
Well, you're going to have to engage with our legislators. What I can say is that specifically in this region, you know, Assemblywoman Pat Fahey, Assemblyman John McDonald, Assemblywoman Carrie Warner, they're always a phone call away, and we continue to dialogue even when we can't agree. And so I'm very hopeful that the materials that we have, the materials that I'm going to be sharing with them, will compel more engagement, specifically in the assembly. But I fear that without assistance from some of their colleagues downstate, we will continue to be engaged in this ideological war that is having its toll in the most vulnerable of communities around the state, not just here in Albany.
So why are the downstaters, legislators, so recalcitrant about making this happen?
I cannot speak for them. I do know that the political winds, you know, specifically in downstate communities, have not yet shifted in a direction that would force people to look at the results and specifically look at the communities that these policies are impacting on. And until that happens, I don't think there'll be much movement here. But to your listenership, look, as Americans, as New Yorkers, we are capable of doing amazing things. We've established this over the years. We don't have to exist in a political climate where it's either this or that. We have the ability. There are intelligent people on both sides of the aisle. There are intelligent people who are, in fact, engaged in public safety that can come to the table, that can craft a solution that addresses all of the needs, but takes the public safety into consideration. Because right now, no one's considering public safety. It's all about whether or not the system, whether the system is working for defendants. That cannot be the system that we have. Because in order for communities to thrive, we have to have a mechanism that at least removes individuals that are causing, you know, pain and harm in that community from community.
We are talking to my friend David Soares, who's the district attorney in Albany County. David Soares, let me ask you about the uptick in gun violence. We've seen this in communities around our region. In Albany, the county sheriff's department is assisting the city. Why are shootings up so much? Are guns we are finding in these shootings legal or illegal? How do we get the illegal guns off the streets?
Well, illegal guns is priority number one for every member of law enforcement. It is remarkable the amount of illegal weapons that are out on the street, in addition to ghost guns, guns that are, in fact, obtained over the internet. All total this year, we've recovered over 136% more illegal guns between the Capital District than we have in years past. We are right now, we are 13% higher in the number of gun arrests than we had been in previous years. And so it's a combination of two things, Alan. It's the proliferation of illegal guns, but it's also the continued catch and release of individuals who are, in fact, people who will use guns. It's the combination of those two things that have us in the situation that we're in right now. And again, what I don't want your listeners to walk away from this discussion with is this idea that we're going to be able to solve this with just enforcement. There needs to be significant investments into young people, into activities, positive activities in communities, vulnerable communities, because one of the things that we need to also focus on as a community, and this is a long-term commitment, is we really have to help our young people understand how to resolve conflict. Conflict cannot just simply be resolved by squeezing a trigger. And that's something that has to happen very young, when you're very young. And those initiatives have to be fostered and grown in communities like this, or else this is the future for us. And quite honestly, the people, the residents of the city of Albany, the residents of Albany County deserve so much better than the violence that is being thrust upon them now.
Now, as a DA, I know you have to work very closely with the police, and I'm not asking you to come down on them, but are there plans in Albany to go beyond traditional policing and employ mental health professionals, for example, for situations where armed officers can often make the situation worse? I believe Ithaca is doing it.
Listen, here's the thing that impresses me the most about the Albany Police Department is that, you know, they're understaffed, and they have been for quite some time. They've continued to recruit. But it is what it is. But despite the fact that they're understaffed, they continue to deliver cases to this office. They continue to make their cases, and yet they still continue to invest in alternatives like the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program, also known as LEAD. They continue to expand upon LEAD, and they continue to bring those alternatives to communities. So they're doing an awful lot, even though the conditions are as what I've just said. And I cannot applaud enough the leadership of the department. I don't think it's ever been better than it is now.
Well, that leads to another question. Should being a police officer require more than a high school diploma? I've always thought that some of the problems with policing, not only in Albany, but around the country, have been recruiting people who really aren't qualified.
Well, you know, you're touching on something that I believe must be a priority for the country, not just our state, but for the country. I often say that if you were to take a map of the United States and you unroll that map on your table and you take a bag of chips and you crunch it and you crush it and you open that chip and you spread it on that map, that's about how many police departments we have in this country. And yet you can have a department with very high standards that exists in one community and another department that doesn't have the same hiring or high standards in another. And what needs to happen is actually the professionalization of policing. It's an honorable tradition. Those who are considering getting into policing, I would encourage people to do that now. I believe that the current generation of police are in fact changing policing as we speak, and it's revolutionary. Unfortunately, a lot of these changes are coming on the end of tragedies, but when you consider the volume of interactions that occur on a daily basis, quite frankly, I'm pleased that we don't have more of these tragic incidents. But I agree with you 1,000%. What we need to do is focus on professionalizing the institution. It is one of the most honorable institutions, and people can do a lot of good by being a police officer.
Now, here in my little town of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, I believe they're just putting body cameras on policemen. Is that a good idea?
Body cameras are a fantastic idea. First of all, whether you are in agreement with body cameras or you are not, because I know that there are people that are not in agreement, I think that whatever the public desires from their policing, the public is entitled to that. And if body cams delivers a measure of comfort for some people, then that's something that we should embrace. With that embracing comes, you know, the collateral issues like storage. So there is an expense to pay for that, which is what we're experiencing right now. But I think body cameras and cameras in interview rooms, I think they've really changed how we do business.
We're talking to our friend David Soares, who's the district attorney in Albany County. David, the Supreme Court has overturned New York's over a century-old concealed carry law. How does this impact us?
This has thrust the state into some chaos because what we do not have is a system that people can understand readily. An individual who is carrying a weapon in place A may not be able to carry that weapon in place B. And so what it's done is it's created a patchwork of legal, illegal. And I think that there's a number of people right now that are working very hard at attempting to make this law to improve on the current state of affairs. I know the governor's office has made bold attempts and something that they continue to work on because it is a very, very confusing state that we're in right now. It's just a challenge of our time.
Now, you don't have to be a lawyer to be a judge in New York. You're a lawyer. That's a requirement to be a district attorney, isn't it?
In some town and village courts, you're absolutely correct. There are no requirements that a person have a law license. And so those are the courts that, you know, I think prosecutors and as well as defense attorneys, you know, when practicing in that environment, I think both parties do an effective job of creating a record, protecting a record so that someone's, you know, misinterpretation isn't impacting on a person's liberty. But that is an issue, again, that some communities have taken on, centralizing, you know, local courts. Albany isn't one of those communities at the moment, but we're hoping to one day get there.
But, of course, judges set bail, they send people to jail, they hold trials. Shouldn't they be lawyers?
I believe that they should. I really believe that they should. And I think exceptions were made because there's very small communities that that oftentimes, you know, can't pay the salary. There are a lot of issues, really complex issues. But I do agree with you that at some point the Office of Court Administration must address this issue because, you know, justice denied somewhere is justice denied everywhere.
Okay, so in the governor's race now, Governor Kathy Hochul's opponent, Representative Lee Zeldin, and you seem to be at odds with Governor Hochul over bail reform. But will you vote for her when the time comes?
So let me be very clear about something, okay?
Sure.
I happen to think, first of all, Governor Hochul was thrust into a situation that I don't believe that many people could have handled with the grace steady hand that she has displayed. We have disagreements about public safety policies. I can talk. Bail reform was not. She didn't sign that bill. That was done by her predecessor. She inherited that bill. Her efforts this past budget cycle to correct many of those issues, I applauded her for that. Those issues that were in fact repaired hasn't had the kind of impact that I believe that she believes they would have. There still needs to be corrections. That's something that I will continue to approach and continue to engage through the DA's association with the governor, as well as the assembly, as well as with the Senate. I'm doing my best in this moment not to make this a political issue, but to continue to cast the light on the communities of color that are being the most impacted by the failures of these policies. I am their voice. I speak for the people. I speak for the communities that oftentimes don't have people speaking for them in the context of public safety. That's what I'm doing here. And my vocal opposition to these reforms should not be cast in political terms as though that I'm somehow denigrating the efforts of one Governor Hochul and agreeing with her opponent. Nothing could be further from the truth.
We've been talking to our friend David Soares, who is the district attorney in Albany, and we are very happy that you come on and you talk to us about these very contentious and difficult issues, David. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan.